Question authority. And when authority answers, Arch One Eyebrow and ask, is that so? The Kate Daly Show starts now.
Where does the real power lie? The power behind the power. Because it's no longer about who lives in the White House. It's about who owns the White House.
This is the presidency. How much higher can a politician go?
The real power isn't here. It's beyond here. It's above it, but still working in conjunction with it.
Oh, creepy. Even creepier with Kevin Spacey saying it, I have to say, after what's gone down the last couple of years. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. I'm so glad that you're with me today. And there's so much to talk about. This show is going to be packed full. You'll see. In this first hour, I've got Investigator Dave, and I'm happy to have him aboard. And then we'll be talking about a couple of different subjects, actually. A couple of our world wars, the media, the Office of King, all kinds of different things. I think you're going to learn something today. And then also, I have to say, on Tuesday, Matt Walsh will join us on the show. Matt Walsh is a very, very, very popular podcaster, author, and just makes a lot of good common sense. So he'll be on the show. And then, of course, the next week, we have Dana Lash on the show. So kind of 2 weeks back to back, that'll be kind of fun with those two hosts. Always appreciate them. I was on The Blaze with them, and there were about 15 of us on The Blaze, and they were also with me there. So that'll be a lot of fun to say hello to them again. And just a lot going on. Go to katedalyradio.com. Make sure that you hit the website, hit Balance of Nature. Make sure you're getting that particular supplement in your diet because you need the fruits and vegetables. We all do. We need the nutrients right now. In fact, I'm going to be talking about some of the things going on with Corona that have been really, really interesting in Wuhan behind the scenes. I want to talk about kind of a new development in the last hour as well. And also locusts everywhere. You would not believe how many locusts are out there. So in light of all of that information today, you're going to want to take your vegetables was my point. Go to Balance of Nature, put in my name, Kate, K-A-T-E, use that code and get 35% off right now. It's the biggest deal they give and also free shipping. And it's also guaranteed. You can just try it out. It's amazing. You will love it. You'll feel a difference. Investigator Dave, so happy to have you with me. How are you?
Kate, I'm happy to be here.
Excellent.
Thank you for inviting me.
So much to talk about. I can't wait to get rolling because it's always like, bam, bam. You know, we got so much to talk about. So where do you want to start, Investigator Dave? Now, if you don't know Investigator Dave, he's been with me, my gosh, six years. And also a long investigative LAPD background. That's why we call him Investigator Dave. He's always looking at a case or looking at a situation through the eyes of, say, like a detective. And so usually we do the bum, 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 you know, not that music. What is the music? Dragnet, right? Dragnet music.
Yeah.
I don't have it on me, but anyway, it's that always reminds me of you, Investigator Dave. Just a long, long background in all of that.
Just the facts, man.
Yes, yes, and of course, you know, a major in history and also a teacher, and most people don't realize that about you. And I put up a meme, hat tip to Helen on this, on the Kate Daly Show, and this was one of the greatest statements I've ever heard. If you trust your government, then your history teacher did not do their job. It's so true. It is the truth,
very
though.
True.
Yeah. So tell me, where do you want to start?
Well, I wanted to start here with a speech given by Benjamin Franklin in 1787. And the Federal Convention, of when they were debating the Constitution of the United States, and this comes from the Anti-Federalist Papers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
As you know, back then they debated back and forth, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists.
That was their social media, right? That was their social media. That was their, they did it in the newspapers, and they also did it in these papers, and this is how they debated things, was the, and what were the Anti and what were the Federalists?
The Federalists were for stronger federal government, more almost like England, you know, what they just got away from.
Right.
Certain ones,
preserving
like Hamilton wanted to, you know, stronger executive, very strong executive. It was actually for, you could call him your highness and he'd be there forever, that kind of thing. And the Anti-Federalists were for the people. Just a weak, weak federal government to give most of the power to the people. And Benjamin Franklin here is arguing that we shouldn't even pay the executive, the president. He should not even receive any recompense at all. And he got up and he said this, if I can give a little speech here, his speech here a little bit.
Sure.
He said, "Sir, there are two passions which have a powerful influence in the affairs of men. These are ambition and avarice, the love of power and the love of money. Separately, each of these has great force in prompting men to action. But when united in view of the same object, they have in many minds the most violent effects. Place before the eyes of such men a post of honor that shall be at the same time a place of profit, and they will move heaven and earth to obtain it."
Wow.
And then he says, what kind are the men who will strive for this profitable preeminence? Through all the bustle of cabal, the heat of contention, the infinite mutual abuse of parties, tearing to pieces the best of characters, it will not be the wise and the moderate, the lovers of peace and good order, the men best fittest for the trust. It will be the bold and the violent, the men of strong passions and indefatigable activity in their selfish pursuits. These will thrust themselves into your government and be your rulers. And these two will be mistaken in the expected happiness of their situation, for their vanquished competitors of the same spirit, of the same motives, will perpetually be endeavoring to distress their administration, thwart their measures, and render them odious to the people.
Wow.
So what he's saying here is that you start giving power and money to the executive, and he was voted down when they ended up paying the executive, the president. But he says you give them both, and it's just going to accumulate and accumulate, and the worst people are going to seek that office because it's powerful and it's profitable. And boy, hasn't that happened, I think, over the years. Occasionally, you know, that's why they had to do, well, we'll do it every 4 years. We'll have somebody in.
Sure.
But on and on and on. FDR was a classic response to Benjamin Franklin,
right.
I believe, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just wanted it over and over and over, never wanted to leave. And
true.
Then accumulated a more and more powerful government as he did so.
Isn't it, it can only go one way. And that's what, it's so hard for us because we want to think, because we're America and so different of a country, different government, that somehow that doesn't affect us. It does. Government only has one way it can go, and that is to grasp more power. There never has been a government on earth that stayed within its bounds. So
yeah,
we don't have any proof
exactly
of,
right.
Of that happening ever. So, yeah. So hence,
one of the first things
statement.
They wanted to teach us is we are not that way.
Mm-hmm.
We're for you.
Right.
We are not seeking after money or power. We're trying to help you. And the first thing they try to do is pull the wool over the eyes of the people of who they really are.
Right.
And so, you were right. It's happened all the time that way.
That's why that statement, if you trust your government, then your history teacher didn't do a good job. It's so true. Because if the history teachers aren't teaching the kids that they have to be vigilant, they're the ones that have to correct government. They're the ones that have to make sure that government does not contain too much power or grab too much power. They have to stop it. They have not done their job. Because you can talk about history all day long, but if the subject of keeping your government contained doesn't come up ever, then we're totally screwed as a people, which we've been. We've been for a long time.
So. And one of the best ways to do that is to get control of the monetary supply.
Yes.
Agree. So that, keep it in your hands, not the people's, not the states, not
right.
anybody else. Get it in your hands.
That's very, very true.
So why they were so mad at Andy Jackson for knocking off the federal bank.
Right.
And tried to kill him even, I believe, because of that.
Wow.
So, all right. So wars is another way.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I do have to talk.
I was teasing him earlier.
Boy, that was terrible. Yeah, I do have a little bit of leftover. Okay. one of the best ways to change a people, mm-hmm. to make the people subservient to the government and willing to do whatever the government says is through warfare.
That's true.
If you can keep those going, you can accumulate money and power endlessly.
Yeah.
And so I thought about that as I was thinking about, you know, some of the wars that we have been in, especially World War One. Mm-hmm. This was kind of crazy. But, you know, actually, to tell you the truth, World War II, Civil War, all of them have the same premise, you know, money and power.
Right.
And so.
I agree with you.
Did you know Germany in 1915, 1 year after the war started, mm-hmm. and we all know, you know all about the Illuminati and Rothschilds and how they wanted to topple the kings of Europe and mm-hmm. make them all subservient financially to themselves.
Sure.
And so they got the war started. But then they had to have the war continuing once it started. By 1915, the Germans were running out of all kinds of resources to fight. Mm-hmm. They couldn't fight another war. So the banksters came in, and they said, okay, what do you need? Well, what you need is money. You mm-hmm. need coal to keep their factories working, make submarines and battleships. And so Scandinavia had a lot of coal. Mm-hmm. So the banksters came into Scandinavia and set up neutral coal sources and shipped it to Germany so they could keep fighting.
Okay.
And then Germany needed glycerin, animal fat, for the mm-hmm. manufacture of explosives. Mm-hmm. And the banksters made sure they got this. They got it from, because it controlled this, they controlled the seas from all these neutral countries. The British actually fulfilled these orders for them, but for months and money. Same applies to copper, zinc, nickel, tin, and other things. You know, they'd all been embargoed, should have been embargoed. Mm-hmm. But they didn't embargo it. Hmm. The trade of tea, coffee, cocoa, and other things went there.
Wow.
Hello?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm here. Mm-hmm.
It was being protested, but all the protests fell on deaf ears because mm-hmm. a minister of blockade was a man by the name of Robert Cecil,
okay.
a member of the Round Table, which was the Central Bankers Cabal. And one of the Round Table was one of the progenitors of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that helped start the Foreign Council of Foreign Relations here.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to stop you there, and then we'll continue right when we get off the break. Right when we get off the break. Because there's a okay. couple of things here I want to say, too, that are really pivotal World War One, World War Two cause. I'll be right back. More with Investigator Dave when I come back. Happy Friday to you, by the way, on the Kate Daly Show. Be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Johnny, get your gun. Take it on the run. Hear them calling you and me. Every son of liberty.
Hi there, welcome back to Kate Daly Show. So welcome back. We're talking with Investigator Dave. And today's show, you know, our Friday show, we usually try and do something a little bit different with the Friday show. Could we talk about headlines? Well, we could, but if I had to spend one more hour talking about what Democrats say, I'm going to blow my freaking head off. So it's not going to happen today. I just can't do it physically but or mentally. But let me say this with Investigator Dave on the show, because we're going to launch back into this. We're going back to the root foundation of our understanding, because I think that we have to have some lessons over and over again and done in different ways so that we really get it. Whenever we talk about government, there's one thing that always crops up. And the thing that crops up is government has their solution ready, but they can't implement a solution, something that they would like to do, without creating a problem first. So they create the problem and they sweep in with their solution and they act like, oh my gosh, we're here to save the day. Okay? This has happened over and over and over and over again with regulation and legislation. I think one thing that we have a hard time getting, because we were not trained up in school to think this way or understand this or even understand the facts. They didn't even get to this in history books when I was going to school, was this. the world wars, the wars that we fought, were that on a bigger scale. When people think that we were drawn into a war, that we went and had to go fight a war, I will say that I have to contradict that statement. And I have to say that it was more of a manufactured crisis in which the solution was war. This is what government knows how to do. They know how to create a problem. They know how to solve a problem government style. And this is exactly what they did with the world wars. And that is one of the hardest concepts to take in and actually digest for us Americans. I think it's really hard for us. And this is where people go, oh, that's a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. When you look at all the people involved in the goings on of these wars, you start to really understand the big picture here. And there was just so many things that happened prior to First World War and the Second World War as to who funded it and the reasons that we went in. And what's your take on that, Dave?
Well, yeah, my take is, number one, the governments are being used, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We say the governments have done this, but actually there's people like you, your introduction there, the beginning, there are people way above the governments. They're using the governments to do this kind of stuff.
Right.
To kill people for profit, mm-hmm. bottom line.
Right.
And so you're exactly right. If this World War One thing, the banks above the government are feeding both sides. They're feeding them with munitions. They're feeding them with coal. They're feeding them with all the materials necessary for war. And they're also feeding them with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 66 million men signed up for World War One or brought into World War One. Over half of them became casualties.
Wow.
You know, 7 million dead. It's just incredible. They just kept, it's like feeding a furnace,
mm-hmm.
a big hot furnace, and just keep that thing stoking. And if one of them starts to, you know, lose coal, well, you just go get some more and you keep shoveling it in there.
Right.
This thing could have been over in 15 and 16. Germany was suing for peace and wanted to quit the war. France was in debt
mm-hmm.
big time because France wasn't part of this English thing, right? And they were 43 million dollars in debt, million pounds sterling.
Mm-hmm.
They had to borrow to just keep their part of it alive.
Right.
All this was discovered in October 1915 by a nurse. Her name was Edith Cavell, and she was a British nurse, and she was the head of a teaching hospital in Belgium, but most of all, she was part of the Belgium Relief Fund. Now, Belgium, you know, was in war also.
Mm-hmm.
Belgium was invaded by Germany in order to get around France.
Okay.
And so everybody was, the big campaign was, let's help the Belgians people. What do you call them, Belgians?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Belgians.
So they were sending tons mm-hmm. and tons of supplies to Belgium because of their destitute situation. But you know where those supplies were going?
What's that?
To Germany. They were going right to Germany. So Edith Cavell, who was the head of the situation, she wrote a big article, an editorial in the London Times, telling what was happening. Hey, all this stuff you're sending to help the Allies in Belgium, it's going right to the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And so she got in big, big trouble. She
wow.
published this in the Nursing Mirror mm-hmm. in London. And because of this, they arranged for her to get arrested in Belgium. The Germans arrested her. she was actually set up by the British. They had her free a couple British prisoners, and so they could have the pretense to arrest her. And once they had arrested her, Germany was just going to give her a, you know, light sentence for her. She's
right.
a nurse. She's the head of a charitable organization.
Mm-hmm.
So she let a couple prisoners go. And then England, Sir William Weissman, the head of the British intelligence, demanded that the Germans execute her for being a spy. And the Germans balked at that. They didn't know why should we execute her as a spy. And he said that, he told them, he says the continuance of the war was at stake. And so finally the Germans agreed. But you know why? The example of this cooperation between the two belligerents, between the two people,
mm-hmm.
Germany and England,
right.
was accomplished because Weissman, the head of British intelligence, worked real close with the head of the U.S. Federal Reserve, Paul Warburg. And Warburg's brother, Max, was the chief of German intelligence and a close friend of Kaiser Wilhelm. And so the collusion was there. Why did they want to execute Edith Cavell, a British nurse? And it was all over the newspapers and everything. She was made an example of, so that they could inflame the population against the evil Germans and keep the war going.
Interesting.
And plus, they were trying to cover up their fact that they were feeding the Germans the war stuff to continue the war.
Right, right.
To the extent that they will go to, they'll cover it up any way that they can, not only kill the people on the battlefield, but anybody that tries to get in their way.
Right.
Like Edith Cavell has to be done away with.
Right. And we're not talking about the Holocaust as much as we're just talking about the reasons in which they take to say, we need war. We need to go into this war. And I do know that that there was a plan kind of set forth by some individuals, basically that called themselves the Illuminati, right? And it called for communism. It called for Nazism. It called for political Zionism and then other international movements. And they were to be organized and then used to foment three global world wars and some revolutions. And so the First World War was to be fought so to enable the Illuminati to destroy Tsarism in Russia. And then that was vowed by Rothschild after the Tsar had torpedoed his scheme at the Congress in Vienna. And then transform Russia into a stronghold of atheistic communism. That was a little bit more, not manufactured, but manipulated than it just happened. A lot of people just think that that just progressed and happened. But I actually, it was more of a manipulation to make that happen. And then those differences stirred up by the agents of the Illuminati between the British and the German empires were to be used to foment the war. And then after the war would be ended, communism would be built up and then used to destroy other governments and weaken religion. So this was a creation. And I don't know if people realize that part of it. That part's really hard, I think, to grasp. It was more created.
And what did they finally do after the war was over? Well, they destroyed the old world order, the old order completely.
Right.
Four empires, the Russian, the German, the Austro-Hungarian, and the Ottoman empires lay in ruins. And worse than that, they depressed Europe,
right,
and enslaved Europe financially, and they killed off the so many of the men that they killed off the really cradle of Christian Western civilization.
They dealt
a mortal blow. This new generation, the new hope was gone, and they kind of came in and took over. Then they had a deflation, and then another world war to finally finish the job.
Well, it was during World War II, international communism was to be built up until it equaled in strength that of the United Christendom, right? And then when it reached that point, then it was to be contained and kept in check until required for that social cataclysm. And then you had Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin put that exact policy into effect. Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson continued on a lot of those same exact policies too. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's just so subtle. They just say everything that they do. You have to demonize, and to get a war going, you have to demonize people. You have to get all the machinery, the war machinery cranked up, and then just get expected. And it's what I see today, and it's kind of the one things I worry about.
I do too.
For instance, just a sidelight here, one of how they do it. I remember I went to the University of Utah once and I wanted to see, they had a big display on the 1936 Olympics in Germany. And Germany went all out for these Olympics. It was the greatest Olympics ever. You know, they had the big auditoriums, and it's where the eternal flame started, and all these athletes inviting people all over the world. But they had to make... They already had 1936 plans for bringing Germany into a big war. And so it was, you know, just step by step by step. One of the ways was during these Olympics, because the whole world was watching these Olympics, was to demonize the Germans and demonize Hitler at that time, way back in 36. And so how many of you people seen the story of Jesse Owens? remember watching that story.
There
was a movie, the Jesse Owens story. It was really kind of a cool movie, you know, how he went over there and how they tried to keep him from winning. And by moving the chalk lines under the broad jump and all this other stuff, you know, and how Hitler in disgust walked out of the arena after he'd won, everything else. It's all lies.
Interesting.
it's amazing. What happened was that, you know, there were 80, 90,000 people applauding Jesse Owens. If you read his story, what he said, it's a completely different thing.
That's interesting. I mean, I know there's a lot of distortion that goes on. And of course, there are the events we know about. And so we're not diminishing those events. What we're saying is that there's some distortion that goes on that the media plays on. And I know that everybody listening is nodding their heads. Yeah, we get that because you can see it. I mean, no matter what we're talking about, we could be talking about any revolution, any war. You're going to see a direct manipulation of events as well as events actually happening, too. So you're not saying that events didn't happen. What you're saying is that there were certain events that the media or they were kind of trained to capitalize on a little bit to foment more aggression, even more than what was what was necessary.
Stirred up even more. You're right. You know, the invasion of Poland, you know, the camps and everything else, those were real.
Yes.
And Hitler's part in that was real. But what I'm trying to say is that they were, every little point, they were trying to aggravate.
Right.
There was a sports writer by the name of Michener, Siegfried Michener. And he's a German sports writer. He even wrote a book on the 1936 Olympics.
Ooh, okay, I'm going to stop you there. We're going to come right back. More with Investigator Dave calling in from the Midwest. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Balance of Nature. Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies.
It just really gave me a sense of well-being, a little bit more energy. You can't really pinpoint it because it's not a fake, like, caffeinated energy. You could feel the good foods coursing through you. I can just feel such a good difference in just my everyday feeling, waking up, sleeping better, the whole thing. So far, so good.
Right now, Balance of Nature is offering 35% off on any new preferred order. Go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Welcome back. This is the Kate Daly Show. I'm Kate Daly, your host. I have Investigator Dave with me on a Friday. And talking about some of the education behind World War I, World War II, and some of the wars, revolutions that we have been engaged in. Because it really is worthy of understanding it a lot better so that when we see World War III come about, and we will in our lifetime, it's really important to know how they work this, why they do it, why they put us in positions that are going to probably seem as if we have to be in a situation more created and manipulated. But I think it's just important to understand what's coming in our future. I have Investigator Dave with me. By the way, you can get the podcast, the recorded versions of this live show that you're listening to right now on podcast at katedalyradio.com. Investigator Dave. Go ahead.
There's a reason for all this. If you look at just prophecy, and I'm, you know, even in the Bible, everybody's wants to know, they're asking Jesus, what's the sign and what's going to happen? When's it going to be? And he's giving them this information. And they all want to know because it's not only the curiosity, but they want to be forewarned, forearmed. Mm-hmm. Like you said,
so you know,
World War III is coming.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
We'll see it.
And so we want to give the patterns, the types and shadows that have happened in the past so we can see what's happening coming down the road.
Oh, I absolutely think you're right. And why war? You know, honestly, it's the only excuse for a one world government that will supposedly ensure peace. That's sort of that overall promise of peace that you can never grasp out there. And then, of course, the economy. economic ruin also brings about a lot of opportunities, and usually for those that in the deepest of deep states, you've got the bankers and the people that whose names aren't even mentioned, like, you know, the Krupp family. You got all these different families who benefit and have benefited off of a lot of these wars. Krupp, for instance, financed Hitler. Same with Rothschilds, and so they make their money.
Yeah. And one of the first things they do is, you know, you got to get a hold of the newspapers today. Even as far back as, you know, 1936, mm-hmm. Michener said that when he was interviewing Owens said, wait a minute, that was one of the most beautiful moments in my life, you know, when I walked by and the Fuhrer raised his hand and waved at me. Wow. And then he shook his hand. He's even got a photograph but they've since come. News media has come out since and put in a fake photograph.
Right.
But there were witnesses to this.
Well, they wanted
to ratchet it up. British pilots and everybody said they witnessed Hitler shaking hands with Owens and congratulating
him.
Well,
that actually doesn't surprise me, because he got into power somehow, and that's because people liked him too. And so he had these certain several qualities that people kind of catered to. And so that actually doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me too that the media tried to ratchet it up even more so. Because you had to have a cause, and you had to get that cause. I mean, the Holocaust was cause enough, but you had to get even a bigger swelling of support worldwide for this.
Yeah, you had to. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, you know, they said that Michener, the reporter said, we can't report this. Mm. And Owens was so disappointed. He says, why don't you report it? And Michener says, and there were other news people with him.
Interesting.
And he says, in fact, Michener said, quote, Owens was disappointed. He shook his head disapprovingly. The press then was very obedient. I make no excuses, but no one wanted to be the one to make Hitler, the monster, look good in any way.
Well, one really interesting thing about this, and then I'm going to let you just go, because I just want to make this point, though, and I don't know if people have ever really thought about this in this way, but throughout the 19th century, the great nations were all very prosperous around the world to a certain extent, and everybody in each nation was very staunchly nationalistic, right? Proud of their country, proud of their sovereignty. It was unthinkable that the French and German would be willing to live under a one-world government, or the Turks or the Russians or the Chinese or the Japanese.
There was no way.
I mean, it was unthinkable to think that they'd be willing to live under a one-world government at all. And so how do you get that to happen when no one wants to participate? Nobody. That I think is probably one of the most bizarre. I think that's one of the thoughts people really need to get. And that was by actually Myron Fagan, not my own thought, but I just thought, hat tip to him. But I thought that was amazing to really think of it in those terms. They had to do a lot to change that. A lot.
Yeah. I agree. And but that statement by Benjamin Franklin, I keep going back and thinking about that, you know. Number one, when you put money and power together, everybody, and like he says, every bad guy is going to try for that.
Right.
And they'll struggle for it. He says, like Franklin says, they'll move heaven and earth to get there, because that's the ultimate goal, to have all power. Franklin also says that in there at one point, he says, there's scarce a king in 100 who would not, if he could, follow the example of Pharaoh, first get all the people's money, then all their lands, and then make them their children's servants forever. It will be said that we don't propose to kings. I know it, but there's a natural inclination in mankind to kingly government.
Hmm.
You know, they'll take everything.
Right.
They don't want to leave anything to anybody else. And they'll go to any extreme to get it. and so it doesn't matter what side you're in. They're both, I believe, just as bad. As an example, did you know that during 1943, Winston Churchill carried out a thing called Operation Vegetarian?
Okay.
In Operation Vegetarian, he put Dr. Paul Fildes in the head of it, the director of the biology department at Portendown. Mm-hmm. Okay. And their plan was to wipe out the German beef and dairy herds and then see the bacteria spread to the human population by producing 5 million anthrax cattle cakes during the war and then drop them over Germany in 1944.
Wow.
That was biological warfare on an extreme case. They actually produced, at the rate of 4,000 a day, anthrax spores. The plans were all so detailed about how many put in a box and how you could drop them, and where you had to wait till the summertime when the grass was out and the cows were out and eating it, you know, and the grass was just starting to dry, so the cows would be more eager. Then that's where we drop them, and then it'd go from the cattle, it'd go to the human beings, and they figured they could kill probably 3-4 million Germans this way, you know, and sicken everybody with the anthrax, and it was all ready to go. But the D-Day operation was successful, and even then they were still thinking of doing it, but General Patton was driving so quickly into Germany, they were worried that the anthrax would get to some of the Allied soldiers, and so they called it off. But what I'm talking about right here, you in their minds, in the British minds and American minds, we had an idea to use chemical weapons, not chemical, but biological weapons on millions of people. And kill them with anthrax. And it was put into operation. And it wasn't until, what, 1990? Actually, after the war, they put all these anthrax things out on an island. I forget the name of the island here. Gannard Island. And they finally, in 1990, they burned all the anthrax, got rid of it.
Right.
But and nobody could visit that island. Still can't.
They usually use the excuse that, well, another government's going to do it to us. So we have to make sure we stay on top by doing it first. And you know, I understand there's a lot of people that say, hey, that's just good warfare. That's just good to be prepared and know what the enemy's going to do. And so a lot gets done under the guise of that. But I think what's interesting to note, too, is that you've got a lot of people working within their own governments, right, within the governments that truly, truly do hijack that government. And so they don't speak for the people. They're not the people don't feel this way. The people wouldn't probably cater to these kinds of ideas that you're talking about and these things that were done. But people that get into power do. And especially, I think people don't realize how big the Jeffrey Epstein case really, really was or should have been to us, because that's how they get them. That's how they get them to do these kinds of things, is to entrap them and to use monetary and sex bribery and all the things that Jeffrey Epstein was one of those players to record, you know, politicians and to record people, to get them into their back pocket, to get them to do the things that they would like them to do. And it's just, it's amazing to watch how the governments, the people that in those high places will hijack their government and not be a representation of the people at all. So when we say a country like us, when we're saying us, we're just talking about the government. We're not talking about us, because there's no way we'd be on board to a lot of the stuff that goes on right now. But.
No, we wouldn't. And I'm afraid what would happen if we were tempted with such a, you know, such power,
right?
Such money, such largesse. I don't know.
Well, and how do you think we'll be dragged into World War III? How do you think they'll do it?
Oh, man. There are so many opportunities to drag us into World War III, because every country's got its ups and downs. Like, and how far down must a country be threatened before they finally take a step to do something about it? Like, look at Turkey right now.
Right.
You know, when I drove through through western Syria, I was driving all the way up, and all of a sudden, right there in the middle of the Syrian border, there were Turkish security guards and border crossing. What's this? It's not on map. They said, oh, yeah, the Turks have just come down here and taken this. And so we had to use our Turkish passports, even though we were in Syria. Now, the Turks love that area up there in the corner. And that's why they're using the leftover ISIS fighters, they call them. We call them terrorists. They call them rebels. But they're hanging on to that little corner there. Right now, Bashar Assad's kicking them out. He's taking over western Aleppo. All of Aleppo, they're landing civilian aircraft now an airliner is in Aleppo for the first time in the last 5 years.
Right.
They're taking all the roadblockings and they're pushing them out. And now, you know, Erdogan saying, well, we're going to come back in. We're going to send our military in there. But I don't think they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you got this big conflict. Of course, Russia's back in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia's helping Syria retake their own country.
Mm-hmm.
And now the worldwide press is saying, oh, there's 900,000 refugees fleeing Syria on the Turkish border trying to get in, women, children. And they're showing some of these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
No, 900,000, just right. A little boy or girl, you know, to make it look really, really bad. But in other, if you look at the news media on the other side, they're saying they're holding ticker tape parades for the Syrian soldiers that are marching in. So what side are you going to believe?
Right.
But how far will Erdogan go before he does send troops in?
Hmm.
Would he? How far would China go? How far would a lot of these countries, you know, Pakistan, India, how far when World War III starts? I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, I think
Iran, for that matter.
I hate to be doom and gloom because I know that we are going to have that. We are going to see that. World War III, we will see it. You know, we might have a little reprieve because I know that President Trump is really not about engaging us in coups, which is fantastic. What a fantastic news. But I do know that on the horizon, we will have people in office that have absolutely no problem demonstrating coups and creating and manipulating these events to throw us into war. And we just have to make sure that we realize what's going on when it's going on. It's the hardest to see when it's happening because it really is tough for people because it's so manipulative.
Kate, I truly believe that Trump is doing everything he can to keep us out of a war.
Mm-hmm.
He really, really is.
Yeah.
And I'm not even convinced personally that he had anything. He had to back up the military, of course, but that he had anything to do with the killing of Soleimani. You know,
I don't know.
The first thing he said was, there's not going to be a war. Not going to be a war. Things are going to be okay.
Right.
That's interesting.
And
he's trying to smooth everything over so fast.
Yeah. It's like a conundrum,
he's
though.
He's not really in control of a lot of what the military does.
No.
He's not.
He's got a couple of people in place that are good, that see it the way he does, but he'll allocate huge amounts of funding, yet we're not demonstrating the coups. So it is kind of a conundrum. It's very, it's like, I'm mad at him for signing those bills because you know that military complex is happy. But then on the other hand, hey, at least we're not taking out other countries' leaders right now like we've been doing. So that's good. It's a tough one.
Complex is avaricious.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has to feed it.
Yes.
Keep it calm.
Yes.
Calm, somewhat calm,
well, maybe
know?
To stay alive. You never know. I know. Can you believe this hour went this quickly? It does.
It
goes. Yeah, it goes that fast. I know. People don't realize, man, it goes quick, especially when you're really engaged in talking about something. Investigator Dave, thank you. We'll need to do part two of this maybe in a few weeks. Are you up for that?
You bet.
Okay. In a couple of weeks. All right. In a couple of weeks on a Friday, we'll do part two. Thank you so much. Because there's really so much to talk about in the way that we were just talking about it. So much more there. I'll be right back. Lots to talk about in the next hour. Don't go anywhere. KateDalyRadio.com.